And a pleasant good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a what we'll call a special edition of Fans in the Pro. Mike Haas here, and Charlie Long is back in the studio. Deuce McAllister will be on the team plane heading to Los Angeles. Dennis Allen today said that pretty much whenever they do these kind of two-hour time zone changes, they will leave early. So that is, in fact, what is happening. So Deuce will not be a part of the show. And I say special edition because I'm not in studio where I normally be. I'm actually in my office here at Caesars Superdome because I was afraid that if I came down to the studio, I would have a hard time getting back to my other job as media manager here at Caesars Superdome because I don't know if you've heard, we've got a few concerts.
It's a little busy, Mike.
Happening back to back to back, that being Taylor Swift. And it has been crazy, but it has been so much fun. I do not have tickets. I put in for the lottery. I did not get tickets, but we're doing the show from my office about 20 feet away from the bowl, which we will not go near. I will say that off. We're doing a sports show here, but it is just kind of a unique show. And Charlie, I know that you had trouble getting to work today yourself.
No, it was a mess downtown, but we're all good to go. So it's a little bit unique, as you mentioned. You're at the Dome. I'm still in the studio, but we'll make it work. It'll be fun.
So, as you know, Charlie's always in the booth with Deuce and I, and, you know, this is kind of where we, you know, spend a great deal of time talking about the Saints injury list, and we will, because there's a ton of names on it, but as you said earlier in your sports wrap, just the Derek Carr doubtful, he will probably be that emergency third quarterback like he was against Denver. Dennis said today that they will check on him Sunday to see, but I feel like it's going to be Spencer Rattler for the third straight week, and then Nick Saldivari out, and Cedric Wilson was out. He got hurt during the week. He was limited on Wednesday and did not practice at all on Thursday and Friday, so he is out. But really, it's about those who are coming back. Pete Werner, Lucas Patrick, Cesar Ruiz, Colin Saunders, Taysom Hill, Chris Olave, who cleared concussion protocol, and, you know, guys who were kind of dinged up, Juwan Johnson, Marshawn Lattimore. But, man, Taysom Hill, Olave, Werner, Patrick, Ruiz. If you want some cats to help take some of the pressure off of Spencer Rattler, that's it, right?
Yeah, so for the first time all year, it feels like the list of players that have an injury designation is actually shorter than the ones that don't. So it's great news. I mean, the three games in 10 days was obviously tough on this team, but having the kind of mini bye that we talked about after playing on Thursday night last week, it allowed a lot of guys to get healthy. Obviously, you mentioned Chris Olave and the concussion protocol, but also a lot of key names that you mentioned. This team is starting to get healthy at the right time, you know, heading to Los Angeles this upcoming weekend. So, you know, they obviously went 0-3 in that three-game and 10-day stretch, but it's nice to see some of these key faces get back.
Man, especially offensively, I agree. So both teams started 2-0 on the season, the Chargers and the Saints. And then the Saints, as we know, have dropped five straight. The Chargers have dropped 3 of 4. They've already had their bye week. That just seems kind of, you know, I know it's early, and I mean, somebody's got to be off. It just feels so early, although if you look back, the Saints would have probably given anything to have a week five open week this year, because you just don't know. I mean, right, you just don't know. And I think it's interesting because the Chargers now, you know, had a kind of a short week. They were on the road Monday night, lost to Arizona, 5 field goals. They were, relearned the message that so many teams have learned, that you can't trade field goals for touchdowns. And so they dropped to 3-3 after starting 2-0. And it's funny, it's Justin Herbert, right? He's got 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. You feel like that would be the story. He threw for 300-plus yards again on Monday night. I think it's the 26th time he's done so. But, you know, it's really more about J.K. Dobbins, right? I mean, you feel like it's more about, can the Saints stop the run, or it doesn't, you know, Herbert's going to be able to do what he wants. If he can't stop the run, man, play action and all the things that he does well is going to be so much better. And we have to be clear that we've just spent some time on the Saints injury report right now we don't know a lot about the Chargers injury report because of the time difference, and theirs is not out that I know of, unless you've seen something new from their Friday statuses. Have you seen anything new concerning their Friday practice status?
Not yet. I think it's going to probably be coming out within the hour, if not right. in the 5 o'clock hour at the latest, I would imagine. So it should be coming soon. But I'm 100% in agreement with you, Mike. Yes, Justin Herbert's the flashy quarterback. Everyone wants to talk about him. But at the same time, going out and getting Coach Harbaugh, right, bringing him back from Michigan, back to the NFL, and what they did in the draft. And that's going to be a prevailing theme of whenever we talk about this Chargers team, what they want to build culture-wise. They want to be able to play good defense, and they want to be able to run the football. Yes, they have Justin Herbert there, and he can make all the throws. He's a stud quarterback. At the same time, you know, their weapons in the passing game don't necessarily terrify you. You know, their wide receivers specifically, like Quentin Johnson and Ladd McConkey, you know, that's it leaves a little bit to be desired so far. Their tight ends, Justin Herbert was slinging it to the tight ends against Arizona, which Will Disley specifically, and we know how the Saints have defended tight ends at times, so that's a little bit, you know, not necessarily encouraging. But as far as the rushing attack goes, they told you exactly what they wanted to do in the first round of this past year's draft. And that was when they took Joe Alt with the fifth overall pick, and they passed on Malik Nabers. And we see what Malik Nabers is doing in New York. He's been outstanding. But at the same time, you know, they had a needed wide receiver. They decided instead to get that bookend tackle, and now they're just sitting pretty with Rayshon Slater and Joe Alt as their tackles. They want to be a physical football team. They want to run it down your throat. Gus Edwards is on IR, but you mentioned J.K. Dobbins, Kamani Vidal as well. That's kind of going to be the two-headed monster that the Saints are going to have to stop.
And clearly important when this the Friday injury report for the Chargers comes out, because if you just kind of look at the guys who have not practiced this week. Now, Wednesday, my thought was probably more of a walkthrough, so that more of an estimation, so to speak. That's why I feel like the Friday report today is going to be so important, because Darius Davis, if you just go by what they have, didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. Will Disley, who had such a huge game Monday night, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Ladd McConkey did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Their linebacker, Denzel Perryman, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. And their wide receiver, Quentin Johnson, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Now, come today, some of those guys are limited or full or another DMP. Man, that changes things, because that is a huge chunk of their offense. Hayden Hurst was the tight end the Falcons have had. He's been everywhere. He didn't practice Wednesday, and he was limited today, so you feel like he is going to be back. But you start talking about Ladd McConkey and Disley and Quentin Johnson and Darius Davis, and we know how they feel, but we'll wait and see, because that how and what they do today, to me, is going to be crucial as to what they do on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. And real quick, I mean, we talked with Mark Schlereth on Tuesday about this, because this was right after the Monday night game with the Cardinals and the Chargers. And one thing that kind of stood out to me was the Chargers' offensive game plan in that matchup. And Mike Dettillier has said this a bunch this week, that, you know, the Chargers haven't scored a touchdown in 16 straight drives. And Cameron Dicker is an awesome kicker for them. Like, he went 5-for-5 in that game against the Cardinals, but still, if you're not scoring touchdowns, you're not going to win. And that's why they lost 17-15. If any one of those field goal drives turns into a touchdown drive, they're sitting with a 4-3 record and or 4-2 record, feeling a lot better about themselves. But as far as the rushing attack, it doesn't jump off the page to you. So far, they've averaged 116.3 yards per game this year, and it feels like it should be better than that. But against the Cardinals, they just really didn't run the ball. And Schlereth, going back to what I was saying earlier when we were talking with Stink back on Tuesday, he basically said that it was a game plan based off of who they were playing, right? Because the Cardinals don't have much of a pass rush at all, so they figured, okay, Justin Herbert, we'll let you throw it 40 times in this game. And he threw 39 times, and he had plenty of success. He, as you mentioned, he threw for over 300 yards in the matchup because the Cardinals just can't really generate a pass rush. When you're looking at the Saints and what you've seen over the last basically 3 weeks, maybe even more than that, is that their rushing defense has faltered and been just near the bottom of the league in general. Right now, the Saints rank at 28th in the NFL, giving up 146.5 yards per game on the ground. So if they're playing kind of offense to combat opposing defenses like they did with the Cardinals and, you know, their pass rush, so that's why they pass so much in that game, with how the Saints are playing the run right now, you can bet Coach Harbaugh and that offensive staff are going to try and run it down their throats.
Sure. I mean, that's, you know, it gets old, but I have to ask, we ask Coach Allen every week, you're going to face it until you stop it. And that's just a fact, right? Until you stop it. And that was a question we had asked him in week one and week two. Then we didn't really ask it much in week two because they did such a good job. And specifically, where I think this team has struggled defensively is first and second down. They have not, you know, when you're running the ball 4, 5, 6 yards on first down, it makes second down calls so much easier, third down calls so much easier. The Chargers had 8 possessions Monday night. 8. That's nothing, right? I mean, you're right. Their offensive numbers, we keep talking about this rushing attack. You know, you got to stop this rushing attack. What did Dobbins have, 41 yards?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean,
40 yards.
It's kind of like playing to your competition.
Right.
So,
but you know, here's – so I tell people that I look at a lot of stats. I'm kind of a stats guy. But in the end, the only stat that matters is that the Chargers defense gives up 13.8 points a game. 13.8. Who cares about anything else when you give up 13.8? Your offense doesn't have to be, but so good. And I think that's what they've been. Kind of, you know, playing to whoever their opponent is, playing to their strengths against that opponent. And I think we'll see a lot of that on Sunday when they do run the ball. So the Saints have to figure out a way. I don't know if it's bringing a safety down and you get Pete Werner back. I don't know what the answer is, but and that's kind of a weird thing to say that you've got to, you'd rather, you want to force, you know, Herbert to the air, right? Yeah, but you know, if you don't stop the run and if you don't do better on first and second down, doesn't really, and the rest of the stats don't matter a whole lot.
No, it is pretty funny that you mentioned the defense, because we got to obviously talk about them as well. They're number one in scoring defense, and that is the most important stat for an opposing defense. You can talk about, you know, the rushing defense, the passing defense, which, you know, they're top 10 in both of those as well. But scoring defense, 13.8 points per game, as you mentioned, Mike. Spencer Rattler, yes, he's going to be getting some key pieces back, especially on the offensive line. Cesar Ruiz, Lucas Patrick are both good to go. Connor McGovern for some center depth as well. But also Chris Olave at wide receiver. Like Juwan Johnson, all these guys, Alvin Kamara, none of them have any injury designation. So they'll be good to go. But this is a very tough, stout, you know, Jim Harbaugh defense with the LA Chargers. So, you know, offensively, they've scored only 9 touchdowns all season, which is kind of funny to think about that they're still sitting with a 3-3 record through 6 games.
That was like the Saints' first 2 games, right?
I know.
It was like their first 9 drives.
Right. Like the Saints, by opposition, have scored 21 this year. But 9 touchdowns through 6 games, that doesn't sound great, but they're still with a 3-3 record because that defense has been so good.
No, I agree. Also, before we get too deep into the show, because we're going to have, coming up in just a little bit, we're going to have Matt Money Smith. He's the voice of the L.A. Chargers. We'll talk about that early grade year one for Jim Harbaugh. They're 3-3. Also, Kurt Heelan, the lead NBA writer, managing editor for NBC Sports, talk about the Pelicans. They're on the West Coast as well. And a special happy birthday to Roger Sedwani of Logo Express Marketing. So hope he has a great birthday weekend. That might include Taylor Swift, LSU in College Station, and maybe the Saints in LA. Who knows? Big weekend. Mike Oss, Charlie Long here. Fans and the Pro coming to you from Caesars Superdome. We're back after this on WWLAMFM.com. Always free in the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans and the Pro. Mike Oss and Charlie Long today is in the studio. I am at Caesars Superdome, where tonight Taylor Swift will open up the first of 3 nights. If you don't know, I wear a couple of hats. I'm very fortunate to work for the radio station and do the play-by-play. I'm also the manager of media relations here. It has been a crazy, crazy fun week, and it begins tonight. So I'll be flying to Los Angeles tomorrow, meet up with Deuce and the team there as they're leaving later on today. Also want to thank Magazine Pizza at 1068 Magazine. Dine in or delivery, the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. Earlier today, Dennis Allen spoke to the media before heading for the buses and Los Angeles. Here's what he had to say, and really the key about getting some people back from the injured list.
Look, we'll hop on a plane this afternoon, head to LA, and start getting ready to go play a game out there. So we're excited about that opportunity.
Was leaving today just for getting used to it.
Pretty typical of a, you know, 2 time zone travel day. You know, we usually add an extra day.
Yeah, you guys have had like the second highest number of rookies on offense, percentage-wise, at least for snaps. I know you guys are getting some veterans back this week. Just what does that do for the offense that maybe you don't have to rely on that experience? Or could you tell that you guys were that young on offense?
I would say this. I would say it's been valuable experience for all these young guys that have had an opportunity to jump in and play. You know, and as we move throughout the course of the season and you go into the future, you know, that experience I think is going to pay off for those guys, you know, as we go forward. So I think, you know, unfortunate to have some guys out, but yet, you know, getting those young guys with that experience, I think, has been good for us. So we'll see, you know, what we do, you know, this week and who we have back and who's available to play. But the good news is that if those young guys are called upon to play, at least they're gaining valuable experience.
What stands out about the Chargers defense? I think they've only allowed 20 points one time this year.
Yeah, look, they play sound, fundamentally sound. They tackle well. They keep the ball in front of them. I think, you know, up front they do a pretty good job, you know, stopping the run. They do a good job getting after the passer a little bit. So I just think they're just a good, fundamentally sound defense that makes you have to earn everything. They do a good job of tackling, and they're a physical football team.
How do you think the team's kind of responded this week, having a little time to reset? And just
yeah, look, here? I think our team's responded well. I think having some of these guys back out here at practice has been energizing for the football team, and you know, we're looking forward to, you know, kind of getting reset a little bit and playing good football.
How would you describe the progress of guys like Nephi Sewell and Tanner Passanio working their way back in IR?
Yeah, I think both those guys are doing a good job. I think they're on schedule in terms of their rehab. I think, you know, Nephi's probably just a little bit ahead of Tano, but I think we're getting close to, you know, hopefully being able to start getting them back out into some practice.
So the expectation is still that there is the potential for them to come back this season?
I think both of them, you know, have a great opportunity to be available to us at some point this season.
With Taysom suffering like two injuries in the span of a couple of games, like, do you guys have to be more careful with like how you're deploying him and stuff like that?
It's kind of a hard question in that, you know, look, this is a tough game that we play, and it's a physical game that we play, and you know, every snap you take, you're putting your body in harm's way, and so yeah, I think we got to pay attention to what we're asking him to do, and yet, you know, there's a certain way that you have to be able to play this game, and so I think, you know, you kind of have to go play a little bit.
Is Chris still on protocol?
No, Chris has been cleared.
Can Harvey be listed as doubtful again this week, like similar to last week as the emergency option?
Yeah.
Do you think he could be an emergency option this week?
Potentially, yeah. I think we'll see where he's at, you know, come Sunday.
Besides, like, just getting off the field on third down, like, what's the challenge of going against a team that likes to have, like, these really long drives like they kind of do?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with first and second down efficiency, you know. You know, it's a lot harder to get off the field when you're facing a bunch of third and two threes. You know, much, I'm not going to say easy, but easier to get off the field when you're facing some third and longs. And so I think it starts with first and second down efficiency, forcing some, you know, longer third down conversions, and then being able to execute when you get in that situation. You're going to have to get some pressure on the quarterback, make him have to speed it up a little bit. All good? Okay, guys, thanks.
Saints head coach Dennis Allen from earlier this afternoon out in Metairie before heading out to SoFi, the third time that this team will play in SoFi for the last 2 years, and that seems a little strange. They played the Rams there last year in December, Chargers this year. They also played the Chargers in preseason last year after they went out and practiced for a couple of days in Costa Mesa. And Charlie, you and I were talking earlier about, and there's some numbers that jump out, and it's going to be really the turnover differential for the Chargers at plus six. They don't turn it over very much. They don't get a ton, but they don't turn it over very much.
Yeah, they take care of the ball, and that's right. Probably one of those hallmarks of Coach Harbaugh. But plus six, which ranks third in the NFL, that obviously jumps off the page to you. But he also talked, I mean, you heard DA kind of break down the fundamentally sound defense that the Chargers play, and he's really right on target. I mean, when your top 10 in both total defense, you know, rushing defense, passing defense, and scoring defense, you're going to win some football games, even with, you know, kind of an anemic offense, I guess you would call it, early on.
Yeah, and third down, they're not strong. Fourth down, I think really the key, and then, you know, I feel like we say this every week, when you look at kind of red zone defense, right, because teams are going to get down there, and that is where both of these teams have been strong. So the Chargers are seventh in the NFL, 45%. The Saints are third in the NFL when teams get down there inside the 20 and they're able not to let them in the end zone, and you can see where it hurt the Chargers against Arizona, but it's kept the Saints kind of in a lot of games, and it, you know, allowed them to have those two blowouts. But, you know, it's one of those areas that it's also one reason the Chargers only give up 13.8 points a game. But that's a key area, because you're going to get down there, but what do you do when you get down there? Can you continue to get seven? And I feel like the Saints of late have started to utilize the tight ends more with Foster and Juwan. You know, if whatever it is they're doing on first down, can we just keep running that play, right? First down the last two games, passes to tight ends that get like 30 plus. So I feel like those tight ends will be very, very key.
Yeah, I agree. But also defending the tight end, because we saw what Will Dissly did, as you mentioned, to the Cardinals this past weekend. But real quick before we hit this break, Mike, I wanted to go back to what you were talking about, the scoring defense and specifically the red zone defense. With the Saints' strong red zone defense, it's going to have to continue, because this Chargers offense is kind of struggling to put it in to the red zone and score those touchdowns. The last touchdown they scored was in the second quarter of their Week 6 game against the Broncos when they got off to that huge 23-0 start. The J.K. Dobbins ran for a 4-yard touchdown with about a minute left to go in the second quarter. So since then, they've gone six quarters, which is, of course, you know, a full game and then a half, without scoring a touchdown, which goes back to that whole thing, 16 straight drives without scoring a touchdown. Now, the Broncos got back into that game in the fourth quarter. They kind of made it look closer than it actually was, but then the Chargers go on to lose to the Cardinals on Monday Night Football this past week. So, you know, it's always kind of unfortunate when you see a team that's, you know, playing really good defense, they still have some high hopes for the season, and then they drop a game right before you have to play them, because you know that they're right. Going to want some, you know, to bounce back and get back in the win column. It's what Tyrann Mathieu always says, that, you know, good teams avoid those long losing streaks, and obviously that's what the Chargers are hoping to do.
And that's what the Saints are trying to get out of as well, right? I mean, you know, Cameron Dicker, both kickers have been near perfect. In fact, Groupie has been perfect. Dicker's only missed one, but he had a 59-yarder last week. That's his career longest and tied a franchise longest. So he's 15 of 16. And like I said, Groupie's been perfect as well. So, you know, every week it could come down to special teams, but it just seems like that's the case across the NFL. Like, find me an NFL kicker that's 80%. It doesn't happen. You're not around. Everybody.
Cameron Dicker's a good one though, Mike. Yeah. So if it comes down to it, it's the same thing that we had back with that Atlanta game, right? With Younghoe Koo. If it came down to a field goal, you weren't feeling great. Of course, that game, of course, came down to a field goal.
But since then, what's he done?
Yeah, no, that's the worst thing,
like
too.
He's missed like three.
That's the worst thing, too. It makes me tear up my hair every single time I see him miss a kick. And some of them are bad, too, Mike.
Oh, my gosh.
He'll just shank one. And just,
he got back-to-back hook left on the after the penalty.
Oh, God.
I was going crazy. Take a break. Fans in the Pro, Mike Haas and Charlie Long coming to you. I'm at Caesars Superdome. He's in the studio. We're back after this. WWL, AMFM.com, and always free in the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Mike Haas and Charlie Long, as Deuce McAllister is en route to Los Angeles, where the Saints will play on Sunday. And joining us now is Matt Moneysmith, the radio voice of the L.A. Chargers. Matt, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. Sorry about that, Mike. I know I was scheduled to come up out of the hour there, but, you know, Dodgers in the World Series out here, so things are a little bit crazy around the radio station.
Well, Matt, you know, I agree. I understand.
Although I don't, humble brag.
No, it's okay, because I'm about to, you know, we're a little busy too. I don't know if you heard, we have three nights of Taylor Swift here at Caesars Superdome. So I don't know how that goes with a World Series, but I know it's we've both had crazy weeks. I can tell you that.
Yes, I imagine that's a battle of the sexes sort of thing, right?
It is.
One half's going to take one, the other going to take the other.
That's right. So you got game one tonight. The one thing that Charlie Long is I'm in the Superdome. In fact, that's where we're doing. I'm doing the show from. Charlie's back in studio. Is that we've not really seen anything of the latest from the Chargers from an injury report, and it's kind of key, since you've got several key offensive players who didn't practice Wednesday, which was probably a walkthrough, but we're waiting to see what they did on Friday and what kind of game status they have. And, I mean, Will Dissly, Ladd McConkey, Perryman, Quentin Johnson, have you heard anything?
No, I'm waiting for it, as you are. Should probably be coming down the pike here in the next 30, 40 minutes. But that's a big one. I mean, you're talking about a wide receiver core that was depleted going into that Cardinals game. No Darius Davis. That's why Jalen Reagor was up to return those kicks. And really, it's been a position group. It's got to be the most challenged position group of the season. And a big reason why this offense has struggled to score points. You can say you want to run the ball all you want, but every defense they face is on their toes and leaning forward with 7, 8, 9 guys in the box. So it's become harder and harder to run with wide receivers struggling to separate. And when you're now talking about Ladd McConkey, their fastest receiver, maybe not being out there, Will Dissly, their number one target, especially on third down, he's the guy that Herbert trusts the most. Those are big names. And I mean, in a passing attack, that even though Herbert put up 350 yards against the Cardinals, these weapons got to get, you know, that's going to be a big one to keep an eye on when it comes to the injury report. Is Darius Davis, Ladd McConkey, and Will Dissly, are at least two of those three going to be out there? Because that'll go a long way.
So I guess this team has been, I mean, when you, Charlie and I have been talking, you give up only 13.8 points a game, so you automatically you're in every game with that defense. And give us an assessment. I know it's been solid for Harbaugh. Is he kind of everything that everybody expected? I know after a 2-0 start, but three of your last four. Now the Saints were 2-0 as well, lost 5 straight. So we feel it, but I'm just wondering what's been the reaction to him.
Well, I'll tell you, the reaction to Harbaugh's been great. I think in terms of kind of how they're reacting to the results, 3-3 instead of 4-2, or maybe even 5-1, considering what your defense is doing. Like, I feel like there's two schools, right? One is, are we wasting Justin Herbert? Is this another Phillip Rivers situation where you got a Hall of Fame level quarterback and you can't surround him with the players to put him over the hump? Or is it, man, the defense has been so bad for so many years under Brandon Staley that we would routinely see the Chargers take leads in the fourth quarter only to lose games, you know, 31-28, 34-31. Now we're on the flip side of that. I feel like most of the fans are looking at it as they'll figure the offense out. Herbert's too good. Like, the fact that the defense seems to be fixed with Jesse Minner and what he's got going, especially it looks like Bosa's going to be back this week. He's been out for the last few weeks, and they still have not allowed more than 20 points in a game. I think it's one of those, and I think the trade deadline is going to go a long way too. Now, that's not going to pertain to the Saints. You know, they're not going to acquire one between now and Sunday, but I think that's sort of kind of what the feeling is. And based on, you know, just kind of how the Saints defense has played, I think the Chargers.
Hey, man, it's okay. We get it.
I think they're looking at us, hey, man, the offense has got to figure something out here this week. You know, the Saints defense has struggled these last 2 weeks. Let's see if they can get after this and feel some rhythm going into this stretch of the schedule where they should be able to get some wins.
You talked about Justin Herbert and the passing attack. I want to bring up the rushing attack, which seems like it's been a little bit underwhelming so far this year. It's 18th in the NFL, 116 rushing yards per game. I want to ask you about, you know, what the Chargers did back in the draft, drafting Joe Alt in the first round and kind of committing to the mindset that Jim Harbaugh wants to build with his team, the culture that he wants to build, playing strong defense and being able to run the football. Obviously, you go in the second round, you get Ladd McConkey, so they did try to shore up the wide receiver room, which was seen as a glaring need and still kind of, as you mentioned, is for the team. But passing on a guy like Malik Nabers for Joe Alt and really kind of just trying to establish the run game with this offense under Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Charlie, I think if you had to do it all over again, they'd do it the same. Alt's been so good, and Slater's been so good. And I think when you look at sort of the trade deadline, and I know the rushing numbers aren't great, but I think that's a product, right, of kind of the wide receivers and trying to get this thing to breathe a little bit. Maybe if DJ Chark comes back this week, he was the guy they brought in to be that true X who can get off press, who runs a 4-3, who can win those 50-50 balls downfield. That's what they have to do. They've just got to get the offense to breathe a little bit because it's been so compacted. But I just look at it like this. Trade deadline, off-season, free agency – you see wide receivers move all the time. Good wide receivers, right? Legitimate ones. Davante Adams, Amari Cooper. You don't see tackles. They're just too valuable. They're too hard to find. And I think you know, if Joe Alt continues to operate at this level that he has thus far, you're talking about the Chargers having the best tackle tandem in the league. And I think that ends up going a long way just consistently. So no doubt you can second guess it because they need a wide receiver. They need a legitimate number one receiver because so these other pieces can fall into place as complementary pieces like McConkey and Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer. But I think just sort of the way that Alt's performed, the leaky situation is not coming from tackles on pass rush or on pressure rates. It's all been interior, and that's something I think you can kind of shore up a little bit better, and that's where the Saints can maybe make some bones is getting after the center and Bozeman and the guards. But as far as the tackles go, man, they've been really good. There's just been nothing coming off the edges.
Matt, we'll let you go, but I'm going to let you go just because I just happened to re-flip back to the Chargers. So Bosa limited today, questionable. DJ Chark limited, questionable. Darius Davis did not practice. He's doubtful. Disley limited, questionable. Hayden Hurst, questionable. And Quentin Johnson was another one we talked about. He was limited today, but still doubtful. And Ladd McConkey, limited, questionable. And Denzel Perryman, limited and questionable. So a lot of still kind of things. It's Friday. Yeah. Kind of. So we'll know more Sunday. But there's nobody that's out, right? And so we'll wait and see.
So that's good news. Usually the questionables just haven't been around this team. They typically play. Doubtfuls typically don't.
Don't, right.
So I'd say given the, you know, yeah. Quentin and Darius, not great that they're not going to be out there, but you tell me you get Bosa and Chark and Disley, and I'll feel pretty good about making right. that sort of, and McConkey especially, that sort of exchange. So should be a good one. I think like all the Charger games this year, expect a one-score game, and it should be pretty darn fun.
All right, Matt Money Smith, you got a big one tonight, Game 1 of the World Series. I will see you on Sunday. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Sorry for the tardiness.
Thanks. No problem.
Thanks, Matt.
No problem. We'll be back after this. Fans in the Pro, Mike Haas, Charlie Long here on WWLAMFM.com. Always free in the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans in the Pro, Mike Haas and Charlie Long. Going to get you after the first hour. We got another whole hour coming your way up to the Brian Kelly Show at 6 o'clock. And really in this 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk Pelicans there on the West Coast. What a huge one tomorrow. LSU and Texas A&M all leading up to the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup at 7 o'clock. What a great weekend. The news is coming up next, and then Charlie and I will be back for the 5 o'clock hour. Keep it right here on WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. And a pleasant good afternoon, and welcome back to Fans in the Pro. Mike Haas, along with Charlie Long, as Deuce McAllister is on his way to Los Angeles as the Saints left early, as they often do. I've stayed behind because I'm working at the Superdome, and the beginning of the Taylor Swift concerts begins tonight. Three straight nights, and I don't know if anybody was looking at Hobby Lobby or Michaels or any of those stores for sequins, but they've got to be out because the gates are open, and it is sequins from one end of the plaza to the other. So I'm looking forward to tonight. It's been a lot of work this week getting everything ready and getting excited for this three nights of concerts and looking forward to it. And Charlie, do you know about Taylor Smith? I'm old.
I don't know
a ton of her music.
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny, Mike. I think the most I know about her is actually from the Travis Kelce stuff. Like, I'm not a huge music head, so I'm more of a, obviously, sports guy. So,
yep, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it because it's been a heck of a week. We've had, and for those who are just kind of wondering, you know, I mean, it's not over. It's like an event within an event, and that event being merchandise sales. If you don't have tickets to any of the nights, you can still come to the Smoothie King Center tomorrow and Sunday and buy merchandise. 10 to 8 Smoothie King Center to still be a part of the action. Utilize this time to talk about college football. Tulane plays tomorrow, but LSU, who would have thought that we'd be here in a week 9, number 8 LSU against 14th-ranked Texas A&M, literally with so much on the line. A&M the first to 4-0 in the SEC. They've won 6 straight. LSU's won 6 straight. They're 3-0, the two only unbeaten teams. There are 5 teams with 1 loss and 4 teams with 2 losses, and the two of those 4 is Alabama and Ole Miss with 2 losses. And so I don't know that we would have picked this one out, you know, when the schedules came out, but it would have a big win in College Station.
Yeah, for sure, especially after week one, Mike, because this something that we've talked about a lot throughout the week, is that both these teams have kind of taken a similar track, I guess you would say, where, you know, obviously LSU drops their season opener to USC in Las Vegas, but also A&M had a huge season opener as well, top 25 matchup against Notre Dame that they lost at home in College Station, and then both these teams just rattle off six straight victories, and they get better every single week. I know Coach Elko has come out and said this, and we haven't really talked much about it, but that they haven't played their best ball yet, which, considering this team is 6-1 and 4-0 in the SEC, it's a little bit kind of nerve-wracking, I guess you would say. But the A&M-LSU matchup, I can't wait for it. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about Tulane and North Texas as well, because it's almost like an inverse there with what both these teams want to do. North Texas is a high-flying offense, and Tulane's defense has been really solid over the last few weeks, specifically, especially against Rice, what they did last weekend as well. So, but first, with this A&M-LSU matchup, Mike, a couple things that I'm really keying in on, and D'Attilier and I previewed this as well. The Texas A&M defensive front versus LSU's offensive line is going to be awesome. Like, if you're someone who likes watching the trenches and the battle, like, up front, you're watching an LSU offensive line that's given up two sacks all season, both of those came against South Carolina, versus an A&M defensive front that has multiple draft picks, specifically like Nick Scowerton, who's probably going to be, you know, maybe if not the first defensive end off the board in the 2025 draft, definitely one of the top three guys taken. Mike said that he doesn't see him falling out of the top 20. I agree. He's had tons of production, started with 10 sacks at Purdue last year, and then he transferred to A&M. He's already got 4.5 sacks this year. He plays typically on the left side of the defensive line, so he's going to be going up against, in all likelihood, right tackle Emory Jones for LSU. But then on the other side, Shamar Stewart for Texas A&M going against Will Campbell. So it's going to be a really, really fun matchup in the trenches. LSU's offensive line does not give up any sacks. They've given up two all season long, and this is an A&M defensive front that may have the most talent that LSU will face all year as far as defensive line goes.
And it feels like this is just from afar, right? Because just from watching that, after the injuries to the running back position early on, it was like they're looking, trying to find that person. And it just feels like they've realized, let's just lean into Garrett Nussmeier. Just lean into Garrett as much as they can, and I feel like it's kind of turned out exactly as they would have wanted. Yeah, I mean, you want to always want a strong running game, but man, as they looked around for that person, just lean hard into Garrett Nussmeier, and he has been awesome.
Yeah, he's been fantastic, but the thing for me is, like, for LSU to win this game in College Station, Caden Durham needs to keep performing. Right. And he's been awesome for them as well. Like, as a freshman running back that Coach Kelly has said is not at 100%, he's closer to 80 to 85%, and he's still going for over 100 yards in an SEC game. Like, the kid's got grit, the kid's got toughness, he's got great vision, as Coach Kelly has praised as well. Someone that they're going to have to rely on in this game, because when Mike and I were previewing this matchup, it feels like whichever team ends up being one-dimensional in this game is going to be at a disadvantage. For LSU, stopping the run is going to be gigantic. You got to force Connor Wegman to throw the ball. I'll say this real quick, Mike. If Connor Wegman throws the ball upwards of 40 to 45 times in this game, the Texas A&M quarterback, I think LSU fans will be feeling really good, because that means they get off to a good start. They kind of eliminate the run game a little bit for A&M, which has been their bread and butter this year. Le'Veon Moss has been outstanding, 674 rushing yards on 105 carries already this year, 8 rushing touchdowns, 6.4 yards per carry. So if you can kind of slow down that rushing attack and force Wegman, who's a talented quarterback, don't get me wrong, but making them one-dimensional, that's something that Coach Kelly keeps kind of highlighting every single time that you go into one of these major matchups. If you can force a team to only pass the ball and not being able to run it, like, that's going to be gigantic for LSU's defense in this matchup.
It'll be a special time, 6:30 College Station. So LSU will then be open, as they often are, as they get ready to host Alabama. They weren't probably expecting Alabama to have two losses, but man, just probably the two best, and I hate to label, but the two best home field advantages in college football: Death Valley, LSU, and then the 12th man at College Station. And to me, it's such a big one for LSU, because if you look at A&M moving forward, A&M moving forward is LSU, then at South Carolina. Now, South Carolina could be a little bit of anything, right? South Carolina has given everybody a hard time. Then it's home New Mexico State, at Auburn, and then it's that season finale with Texas, but it's going to be in College Station. So not the toughest of schedules beyond LSU, which makes it that much more important for LSU Saturday night.
And this is why we keep calling it another playoff game, similar to what it was with the LSU-Ole Miss game when both those teams had one loss. It's like a survive and advance moment, because if you get that second loss, you kind of run out of breathing room, right? So you can't really pick up a third loss, especially with how college football has been this year, where you already have a ton of teams with one loss and a ton of really good teams with two losses. So you don't want to be in that number. You want to stay with that, you know, one loss, keep the winning streak going. That's for both of these squads. But yeah, I agree with you, Mike, and I think it's going to be an awesome game in College Station this weekend. Have you seen the uniform matchup as well? This is a quick side
note. No, I actually haven't.
All whites versus all blacks for A&M. It's like two alternate uniforms, and it's like the same uniforms that LSU wore last week, and it's going to look really clean, but that's obviously, you know, just a little side piece.
Wow. The all white initially wasn't something that I liked initially, like when you just went boom, but it's kind of grown on me. Now, all black at College Station, 6:30, and you just never know. It's still going to be pretty warm down on that football field, but it's going to be a good one. It's a great – it's been a long time, but when I was in Lubbock, I covered Texas A&M and Texas Tech. So this is back when both teams were part of the Southwest Conference. So we're talking about a little bit ago, but that is a unique atmosphere at College Station.
One of my good friends is an A&M grad, and I've always actually wanted to go out to a game in Kyle Field with them. I haven't been yet, but I've heard it's an awesome atmosphere, and especially for these top 15 type of matchups, it's going to be rowdy. For sure, in College Station. But LSU, you know, that's the thing that we kind of talked a lot about previewing Arkansas, was the veteran leadership they have in that group, where they weren't really willing to overlook Arkansas, and it could have been a potential trap game. They just dominate. They win by 24 points, move on to the next one, right?
Yeah.
And so I think they have the leadership and the veterans to kind of not necessarily look past the atmosphere in College Station, but I don't think they're going to be too worried about it necessarily.
We'll talk a little bit about Tulane. We'll talk about some college football, the top 25, as well as game one of the World Series a little later in the show, but we're going to shift gears, talk the Pelicans. Kurt Heelan, lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports at Basketball Talk. Talking about the Pels next here on Sports Talk, WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Mike Haas and Charlie Long here on Fans in the Pro. I'm at Caesars Superdome, and Deuce McAllister is en route to Los Angeles, and Charlie is back in the studio, and we're talking Pelicans as well. The Pelicans get their first win as they beat Chicago at home, did so without Zion Williamson, and now they're going to do some time without DeJounte Murray. And Kurt Heelan joins us now. Kurt's the lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports. And Kurt, man, you know, opening night was hard enough when we get the news is no Zion. Now he's going to be okay, but the Murray had surgery today. I think 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. That is not the debut that we had in mind.
No, especially for a Pelicans team that frankly deserves a break from the basketball gods. They had a few too many injuries in the last few years, and could use something to go their way. And it's a long season, and you can be fine through this. I think you saw that on opening night, but it's not ideal. Just with all the new faces, you just wanted time with everybody there to build some chemistry, and it just hasn't come together yet. Now it's not going to come together till, you know, December, basically.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, Kurt, but one of the best things actually from that opener, and I think you'd agree with me, the debut of Eve Misi. And, you know, the rookie center out of Baylor, like, a lot of us were not really sure what to expect from him. We figured he would come off the bench, which he, in fact, did. But playing 23 minutes in his debut, only two fouls, which was a really nice surprise when you see what happened with Zach Edey in his opener in his NBA debut and how he fouled out in, like, 15 minutes or whatever it was. But also all the production. He stuffed the stat sheet. And, you know, the defensive prowess that you can see and the potential that you can see from Eve Misi was on full display against the Bulls.
Yeah, and he was like, he came into the league considered a project, right? Like he's got a lot of talent. There's a lot there, but he's kind of raw. He's gotten thrust just because of the numbers situation. He's been kind of thrust into a larger role, and he looked great in that first game. And if he and Daniel Theis can give you solid 35 minutes a game, and you can play a little bit of small ball with that, you know, suddenly you're fine, or at least good enough until a center you might really want comes available on the trade market. But that's nothing serious is going to happen there for a little while. You know, at this point in the year, everybody's you know, the first couple of weeks, everybody said, I love our roster. Our roster is great. And reality sets in pretty quickly for some teams, and stuff will start to shift, you know, again, closer to December. So if he can really if he can continue that, if that wasn't a one-off, and he can continue to grow and develop, that's do it fast, that's a huge plus for this team.
I'm just curious, Kurt. So the Pels are out west. They're back-to-back with Portland tonight, and then two at Golden State. And sometimes when I ask this question, people think I'm being negative about Zion, and I'm not. I think that guy can do whatever he wants to do. He's one of those rare players that if he has the ball on the wing and he says, I'm going to the bucket and I'm going to score, there's very few that can stop him. And there's a handful of people that you could put on that list. But I think as we've seen through the, you know, early years that he does, and he gets pounded. He just gets pounded. Yeah. Sometimes it's a foul. Sometimes it's not called. And so I ask this question, and just does he need to develop some shot of his own, 13-footer, a 10-footer, a drive popping shot, you know, something that can – where he can kind of take some of the pressure off having to drive so much, only because he gets pounded. I think he could be awesome, but he just gets pounded.
Look, the best players develop counters and develop, you know, a range of ways to shoot. And for some guys, the Kevin Durants of the world, that comes naturally and easy. But to use an easy example, LeBron, and you let him shoot long, you know, from three or longer shots early in his career. Like, go ahead, take those. Now you really can't do that anymore. Like, he's a legitimate shooter. I think it would be helpful for Zion to have more counters. The more counters, the more ways you can score, the better. It just opens everything up. So I think it would be a huge addition for him to not only develop it, but gain confidence in that kind of shot. But like you said, what you can't do, and Blake Griffin did this over the course of his career, but remember, Blake early in his career dunked everything and had to develop that shot, and it took a little bit of time, but by the end, he'd kind of developed a range of shots. It would be great to see Zion follow more of that arc, because he's going to have to. You know, at some point, your physical skills diminish a little, even his.
Yeah, 100%, Kurt. And looking at the Pelicans' schedule now, back-to-back games at Portland before back-to-back games against Golden State. First, we'll dive into Portland real quick, and I just want to get your thoughts on them. I mean, this is a team that was picking in the lottery for a reason last year, 21-61, finished at the bottom of the Western Conference. You know, they have some good young pieces. They made the move for Denny Avia as well, who, you know, Pelican fans will remember, they played a game against Washington last year, Kurt, where Denny Avia just lit them up. He had, like, a career game. But outside of that, like, Scoot Henderson, and, you know, they drafted Donovan Klingon to go with DeAndre Ayton, so they have a nice kind of pair in the front court. They have some good young pieces, but they haven't necessarily just gelled early on. And, I mean, this is a good time for the Pelicans, I think, to be facing this young team before they can gel and kind of get them early on.
Yeah, exactly. Look, They're chasing the Cooper flag this year, right? They're playing capture the flag, and they're not going to be good this year. They're going to play those young guys a lot and see how they develop, and they do. Shaden Sharp, Anthony Simon, like, they've got really good athletic young players, and it just doesn't all quite fit together yet. And Klingon, too. They're just going to develop these guys over time. Scoot, and I was so high on Scoot Henderson coming out. I'd seen him in the G League, and it – talk about a guy whose game has not translated and hasn't developed the other things he needs to go with his game. I think this is a big year for him. The next year or 2 years, really, he's going to have to, because he hasn't lived up to the number two billing yet. And I'm not writing a 20-year-old off. Like, you know, like,
right.
There's plenty of time. But I think that there's a lot of that going on. Well, they try to see what they can get. And, for you know, look, they're chasing the top of this draft, and that's not, by the way, just Cooper Flagg, Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper. Like, this is a deep draft, five deep, with really good players who could be future all-stars, if not franchise cornerstone players, and they're not the only team thinking that far ahead, but you're right, this is the time to catch them, because they're not good. They're just not.
Right.
I watched part of their opener, and this is the time to catch them.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, as for as underwhelming as last year's draft was, it definitely seems like this one's going to be awesome. So, but we'll get to that months down the line. Kurt, I wanted to ask you about, you know, that opener that Portland had against Golden State, who the Pelicans are going to be playing up next. Yeah. I think it had it on full display a couple things, that Portland's defense still isn't any good, giving up 140 points to Golden State. And so I think that that's kind of a thing for Pelicans fans to keep an eye on tonight, is the Pelicans offense should be operating at a high level against a defense that's very vulnerable. But also, you know, kind of what you can see from Golden State, who the Pelicans will face after this two-game trip to Portland, and what you're kind of expecting from them in kind of, I guess, the era post-Klay Thompson.
I think they're going to still be figuring that out for the first part of the season. Steph Curry is Steph Curry, but is Jonathan Kuminga going to step into that secondary role as a scorer on offense? What, you know, their defense is still going to be good. Draymond is still a good defender. They've got athleticism on that side of the floor. They've got guys actually probably upgraded, frankly, on that end of the floor, because Klay Thompson isn't the same defender he once was. You can't leave him open. That's why he's going to help the Dallas offense so much, but he is not the same defender he once was. I think they actually got a little better this offseason just with the players they brought in. Buddy Hield can still shoot. They brought in a little more defense. I think they're still a pretty good team, and that's a good challenge for the Pelicans, because you guys know this. After you get past Oklahoma City and Dallas, and I'm going to keep Denver in that list for top of the West for now, even though that was not the most impressive opener, and Oklahoma City looked great last night. The rest of the West, out down to Portland, is tight, and those are the games you've got to find a way to kind of maybe at least get a split in of those two. I think it's two, right? In Golden State.
Both of them.
Yeah. Those are the games that are really going to matter, because that is such a tight bunch when you talk about all the teams in the middle, the Memphises and both Los Angeles teams and whatever. It's going to just be such a clump in the middle, and those games are, even now, even this early in the season, those games will matter come at the end.
And it matter because, you know, this team last year, the Pelicans, were so good on the road. Better than they were at home. 28-14 on the road, 21-19. Hard to believe, really, at home. But it feels like at 49-33 last year, you know, struggled a little bit down the stretch, lost five of their last 10, that we've been here before. Take injuries out of it. Does this team have the tools, and it feels like clearly they do, to take that next step, to not be that play-in, to not be fighting towards the bottom? It feels like they do.
I do. I think if everything, and this is where the injuries kind of sting a little bit, but I think they absolutely have the ability to be anywhere from 4-5, maybe 5-6 for sure, but avoiding the play-in and being comfortably in and getting a first-round matchup where they like, versus, like you said, having to go through the play-in. And the problem with going through the play-in, even if you do and you're the 7th seed right now, you're going to get, well, Oklahoma City, I think, probably wins the conference, but you're going to get Oklahoma City, or you're going to get Dallas, or you're going to get somebody else really good at the top. I think New Orleans is ready for that next step, but that's where coming together as quickly as you can and winning in the regular season matters, because, like I said, the West is 4 through 12 is going to be really tight, and maybe 4 through 13, because that Wembanyama guy in San Antonio is going to win them a few games. He's going to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Kurt, the West is razor thin, kind of as you're mentioning here. But and as you mentioned, the Thunder, obviously the favorites, and we saw what they did to the Nuggets on their opener. But Denver's going to be up there at the end of the season. Dallas, as you mentioned, as well. Like, who are some of these teams? Minnesota will probably, I don't even know if they'll take a step back necessarily. I think they'll still be in the conversation. But who are some of the teams that we're not necessarily talking about early on that you expect to be in that conversation in the Western Conference? Kind of the surprise teams.
Don't sleep on Memphis. And I know that the betting markets kind of eventually caught up with this, and there's probably some fans out there listening. Look, this was a team that won 50-plus games 2 years in a row, and then were just decimated by injuries and obviously the Jaw suspension last year, but also had, I believe, more games lost to injuries than any other team. They were just, you know, Jaw only played 9 games because he had to have shoulder surgery in it. Desmond Bane missed time. Steven Adams missed the entire season. They're asking a lot of Zach Edey, who, you know, you mentioned earlier. to kind of step into that Steven Adams role. And he's a big physical guy who's not going to get calls as a rookie. So there's going to be some nights like that. But he's, I think, built for what they want him to do. I watched him at Summer League, and my impression was, first off, dude is a legit 7'4". He's huge, and he just knows how to be 7'4", if you know what I mean. Like, he just knows how to be big and in the way, and kind of is a little more mobile than you think. But all that said, I think that that's a team with Desmond Bane, with everything they've got, and Marcus Smart's there now, that's a threat. That's a top four threat in the West. I think that's somebody you can't sleep on. They're gonna bounce back, and Ja Morant's gonna remind us, as he did frankly in the opener with a couple plays. That's just a walking highlight. He's just one of the most fun players to watch in the league.
And Kurt, we'll have you on multiple times throughout the season, I'm sure, as well. But, you know, we're one game in, for some teams, two games in to the 2024-25 regular season. And in the Eastern Conference, I mean, is anybody going to come close to catching Boston? It just feels like it's Boston and then everyone else.
I really hope that by the end of the season, I think New York and Minnesota are both, it's just going to take time to mesh, and I'm not sure. I'd like to think New York got a little better with Towns, but there's a lot of questions there about their defense and depth. Philadelphia is great on paper. Let's see if they can get Paul George and Joel Embiid into a game at the same time. I hope so, because we know Boston's really good, and I just like to see them pushed by, even if it's Cleveland coming together, if Evan Mobley can keep playing like the way he did opening night, you know, they can be very good if he takes a step forward. I want somebody out there to push them, because they're just going to be really good. And the West is going to be such a gauntlet. And I don't want Boston to be able to kind of waltz to the finals all healthy and coasting and rested, and then play, you know, the survivor of the gladiator games out of the East, out of the West, I mean, and then, you know, have this huge advantage in the finals.
Well, Kurt, we appreciate your time. It's going to be a heck of a season, and you know we're thrilled to have the Pelicans on our air. I don't like so much that already on the 27th we got Portland at 5:00, Saints at 3:00. We don't need to be playing the same days near the same times, but
that's tough.
You know, it is what it is. No. But we're excited as heck to have them on our air and to have you on our air, and we appreciate your time.
I look forward to doing it a lot this year, guys, and I think it's going to be a fun year for Pelican fans. I think that this is. You've got one of my League Pass favorite teams. I just think they're going to be so much fun.
Thanks, Kurt.
Very cool. Kurt Helan, lead NBA writer, managing editor for NBC Sports at Basketball Talk Sports. We'll be right back. Fans in a Pro, Mike Cost, Charlie Long, back after this. WWAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans in a Pro, Mike Cost. I'm coming to you from Caesars Superdome. Deuce is en route to Los Angeles with the team. Charlie is in studio as we get you ready for the Brian Kelly Show at 6 and the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup at 7. We want to thank all the good folks at Magazine Pizza for feeding our Sports Talk crew on game day. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine, dine in or delivery, the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. Talked about LSU and Texas A&M earlier. Tulane, 3-0 in conference against North Texas. So North Texas, it's a big deal for them because they're 5-2 overall. They're 3-0 at home, 2-1 in conference, but they are on ESPN2 for the first time in 10 years.
Wow.
So if you like the color green, you'll want to tune in because it's the Mean Green versus the Green Wave tomorrow. But you got to get up early. It's one of these 11 a.m. starts. It's also their homecoming. Who has homecoming at 11 a.m.? But that's television, right? And so, but it's Tulane playing good football of late. But you got to because you got two. There are three undefeateds in the conference: Tulane, Army, and Navy.
Yeah.
That is good stuff, man.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Stuff.
And with North Texas, let's get into a quick preview of them. As I mentioned earlier, they can put up points in bunches, Mike. I mean, the fewest points they scored all year was 21 in a 66-21 loss at Texas Tech. Other than that, 52 points at South Alabama, 35 against Stephen F. Austin, 47 against Wyoming, 52 against Tulsa, 41 against Florida Atlantic, and then 44 against Memphis. And Memphis, who was the preseason pick to win the AAC, I mean, they put up 44 points against Memphis. The only issue, they give up 52. So their defense is a little bit vulnerable. This could be a game where Darian Mensah and just kind of I don't want to say slices and dices them, but it feels like one of those games where the Tulane offense has a strong performance, and it's going to be up to the Tulane defense to be able to contain this mean green passing attack led by Chandler Morris, the quarterback, who, by the way, Mike, top three in FBS in passing yards already, 2,424 yards.
Gosh, man.
Yeah, he's put up numbers in bunches, 23 passing touchdowns. He has thrown 8 interceptions, so if the Green Wave can force some turnovers, that would be nice, obviously. But it just feels like one of those games for Tulane where if they can kind of control the clock, Mekhi Hughes running the football, Darian Minson making some good decisions, kind of preventing those turnovers. The Tulane defense has played so well recently. We had Coach Summerall on after the UL game where, you know, they went into Lafayette and beat my Raging Cajuns 41-33, and he really challenged his defense after that game. He said he didn't think the defense played very well, and ever since then, they've been on a roll defensively. They've given up 10 points, 20 points, and 10 points in the last three games against South Florida, UAB, and Rice. So they've been playing great football. It's kind of like strength versus strength, right? The Tulane defense right now going up against, you know, that North Texas high-flying offense, so should be a really fun matchup on ESPN2.
So check out this switch here. The Raging Cajuns, Ron Guidry, Lafayette, Karen Crow High School.
Louisiana Lightning.
That's right. He was on the 1981 Yankees that played the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's the last time these two teams have met in the World Series. They're meeting tonight, Game 1 in Los Angeles. I mean, we think of this old, you know, grizzled rivalry. 1981, I mean, it's here. I was like, who was on the rosters, right? So Tommy John. So most people are going to go, wait, I thought that guy was a surgeon.
Right.
I thought he was a surgeon, right? Lou Piniella, Aurelio Rodriguez, I grew up watching him with the Senators. Dave Winfield, Reggie Jackson against Dusty Baker, Steve Garvey, Bert Hooten, Steve Howell, Steve Sachs, and it's just unbelievable. I 1981.
Yeah, I'd like to think my Astros have a little bit of something to do with that recently, but in all honesty, the Dodgers have been playoff chokers. Like, they haven't even made it to the World Series except for that bubble year, you know, the COVID year where it was a shortened season. So, you know, they're back, and now you're looking at the Yankees, and the boogeyman was out of the way, so to speak. I joked with Steve about that. The Astros weren't there to knock them out of the playoffs, and they took care of business. You got to give them credit, taking out the Royals and then obviously the Guardians on the way to the World Series, their first World Series since 2009. So it's you know, one of those matchups. Obviously, the TV execs are all excited, New York versus L.A. But, you know, when we were talking with Scott Sanders about it, I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it had to have been yesterday. He kind of mentioned, you know, if you're looking at starting pitching, the Yankees have the advantage there. The Dodgers may have a little bit of an advantage in the bullpen, but then both these lineups are so star-studded, it's just going to come down to some key moments. I think it's going to be a really tight series. I would expect either 6 or 7 games.
Yep. Game 2 tomorrow night from Chavez Ravine. Maybe we'll just check it out since I'm heading to Los Angeles tomorrow. Then no game on Sunday as the Saints play the Chargers. And we'll wrap things up here on Fans in the Pro. Mike Austin, Charlie Long back after this. WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Some final thoughts. It all begins 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday with Steve Geller and Charlie Long with First Take. Then it's Bobby Hebert at 1 o'clock. Kickoff at 3 with Deuce and myself. Charlie, week 8 shouldn't be must wins, but you cannot afford 6 straight losses.
Absolutely not. And you got to figure out a way to come out with a win here. And this is a Charter offense that really hasn't been performing that well. It's been a defense that's been excellent, so it's going to create a tough task for your offense, but you're also getting some pieces back. It goes back to what we were saying early, Mike. You know, the injury report today, only a couple guys out, and that's just Nick Saldivari and Cedric Wilson. But outside of that, you're returning a lot of pieces that you've been missing in this 5-game losing skid.
Yep, that Spencer Rattler will get his third start, and Atlanta lost last week, Tampa lost last week. You got to keep shortening that gap, and that starts with the win at Los Angeles. My thanks to Charlie Long, not only in the booth, but a co-host today. I'm coming to you from Caesars Superdome. We got the first of 3 nights of concerts, and I'll head to Los Angeles tomorrow. Of course, the Pelicans out west as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Fans in the Pro, we got the Brian Kelly Show coming up next, and it's the Allstate Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. Have a great night. Thank you, Charlie.